Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we certainly appreciate that. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Good to be back, Newell.
And I hope you have a happy 4th of July and a 250th celebration of our country this weekend, and hope you have a great time.
Hey, thank you so much. Same to you and your audience out there. I got big plans spending with my granddaughters in Monroe this weekend. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Always great. So let's jump into this. Really a weird happenstance. It's revealed the other day that a grand jury on its own volition decides to undertake an investigation of the Louisiana Attorney General relative to some letters sent to members of the council and the mayor of the city of New Orleans, outlining possible actions that could be taken by her office. And they are characterized as public intimidation, otherwise known as threats.
Yeah. You know, you can't make this stuff up. And, you know, if anybody believes that a grand jury would self-initiate this investigation without prompting from outside political forces, you know, I've got some swampland I can make you a deal on. You know, so yeah. This is more political theater. And let's kind of go through this for your audience so they understand the backdrop in all of this. And to understand this, you need to go back to post-Katrina 2006. You know, there was legislation passed in 2006 that tried to consolidate several offices in Orleans Parish that were unique to Orleans Parish. New Orleans was the only jurisdiction in the state that had two sheriffs, only jurisdiction in the state that had seven assessors, only jurisdiction in the state that had two clerks of court. So this legislation was passed. The sheriff's offices were consolidated. The seven assessor's offices were consolidated into one assessor's office. And before the clerk of courts could be consolidated, the legislation was repealed. So the reason for the consolidation was that all of those offices were inefficient and costing money. So in the context of the fact that Act 15, which is the legislation that has prompted all of this furor, Act 15 was passed on April the 30th, during this most recent legislative session, that consolidated the duties of two clerks of court into one clerk of court. The civil sheriff was the was legislatively designated by this act as the single clerk of court, and all of the duties of the criminal court were consolidated under the civil sheriff's office. So we've seen other positions eliminated in the New Orleans criminal justice system during this past session, and the method has been last in, first out. So the last clerk elected was Calvin Duncan, who is elected by the public to be the criminal clerk. And the clerk that has been in office the longest was Chelsea Napoleon from Civil District Court. Part of the justification for consolidating these two clerks' offices was fiscal. So under the two-clerk system, civil district court generates revenue through filings. And because they generate revenue, the city of New Orleans does not have to provide any funding for the operation of the clerk's office or for the operation of the civil district court, the judges. But conversely, because the criminal clerk doesn't generate any revenue, the city has to fund the operation of the clerk's office and the operations of the court. And the legislature has to kick in about $1 million. So this year, the city was had scheduled and budgeted over $6 million for the operation of the criminal clerk of court's office. Civil district court and the clerk's office required no city funding. In fact, the civil district court judicial administrator, clerk of court, they have a $20+ million surplus there. And so by consolidating these two clerks of court into one office, like every other parish, like every other judicial district in the state of Louisiana, the city was going to be saving money and the state was going to be saving money. And New Orleans was going to be, joining the rank and file of every other parish in the state with one clerk of court. So what happened is, after this legislation went into effect on April the 30th, when the governor signed it, someone filed a lawsuit in Baton Rouge requesting a declaratory judgment to clarify whether the act of the legislature was in fact lawful. So that matter was adopted by the Louisiana Supreme Court, who agreed to take on this to clarify this, because ultimately this process was going to be appealed through the system. So for the purposes of expediency, the Supreme Court accepted this matter, and the Supreme Court accepted it on May the 10th. On May the 11th, the city council voted by, I think, a 4-2 margin to appoint an interim clerk of court, claiming that the office this is a newly created position. Act 15 created a new elective office, a single clerk of court. The legislative act said that this was a consolidation. So the Supreme Court, in accepting this matter, was going to decide whether, who was right, whether the New Orleans City Council was right or the legislature was right. So the council took this position because the district attorney, Jason Williams, wrote a letter advising the council that this was a newly created office and a special election should be called. So the council accepted the letter and recommendation of the DA, but Liz Merle, the attorney general, who is the attorney for the state of Louisiana, and she's constitutionally required to defend the laws of Louisiana. So when the legislature passed this act, that triggered her requirement that she defends the actions of the Louisiana legislature. So she wrote a letter to the council saying, stand down. The matter is going to be decided by the Supreme Court. Just wait on this. The council elected to ignore her letter, appointed an interim criminal clerk of court. And she wrote a second letter to them saying that your actions may have violated a state misdemeanor law, and that misdemeanor law could result in someone's removal from office because you are denying the duly elected clerk of court, which was Chelsea Napoleon, based on Act 15, to assume her office and duties. Chelsea Napoleon also filed a lawsuit to allow her to move forward as the sole clerk of court. So that matter, the letter that was written where the attorney general, in attempting to warn the council, just wait, let's let the Supreme Court clear this matter up. That her advice, legal advice, which she was required to give because she's defending the state of Louisiana, was ignored by the city council. They appointed an interim clerk of court and called a special election. And so this matter has resulted in, we had to wait about 10 days for the Louisiana Supreme Court to rule on this matter. And after they reviewed all the evidence, the Supreme Court concluded that there was no provision of Louisiana or the United States constitutional law that prohibits this act from being immediately effective. So essentially, the Louisiana Supreme Court agreed with the position of Liz Merle that the act of the legislature was in fact lawful. The legislature had the authority to do this. This legislation that had been passed previously in 2006 that consolidated all of those offices and should have resulted in the consolidation of the two clerks' office back in the early 2000s, the Supreme Court said that the legislature absolutely has the authority to do that. So, Chelsea Napoleon has been, you know, operating the consolidated clerk's duties. The election that was scheduled that went off without a hitch, and we thought the matter was over. Come to find out on Tuesday, the story breaks that a special grand jury has self-initiated an investigation into whether or not Liz Merle may have committed the felony of public intimidation in writing that letter to the city council. So, you know, I'm a former prosecutor. I cannot recall a public intimidation prosecution ever being successful. Normally, public intimidation is going to be through acts of violence. And in this particular case, there was no acts of violence. If Liz Merle believed that it was appropriate to charge somebody with a crime, she could have done it when the city council appointed an interim. She elected not to do it. She, before her second letter, she urged the council to wait, let the Supreme Court rule on this matter. That advice was ignored. And even though she wrote that letter to the council pointing out what the law was, she didn't take any action in this. So, you know, when the Supreme Court issued this ruling, one of the justices stated in his opinion that far too much political posturing has already occurred as a result of the enactment of Act 15. And he went on to say, more political posturing may follow. That was Justice John Wiemer. And he must have had his crystal ball working for him because he was absolutely right. So we found out on Tuesday of this week that now a special prosecutor is presenting evidence of possible public intimidation to a New Orleans grand jury. And as I stated, I've never seen a public intimidation conviction during that I can recall ever seeing. I checked the records in Orleans Parish. Since 2022, there have been 4 public intimidation prosecutions, meaning that the New Orleans District Attorney under Jason Williams filed felony charges against 4 individuals alleging public intimidation. All 4 of those cases were dismissed by the New Orleans District Attorney's Office. So to say that the Louisiana Attorney General has committed a crime in this matter is, you know, I think absurd, because this, she tried to warn the council, and she took no action to prosecute anyone or arrest anybody. So the other thing that really hasn't been discussed at all, not only was this not a threat of violence, she took no action after she wrote that letter, but she wrote that letter in good faith. And prosecutors aren't required to be right about everything that they do. They just need to be operating in good faith. And you're looking at, you know, under Louisiana law, there is an absolute immunity privilege that's conferred upon prosecutors for performing their duties. So, you know, to say that a grand jury is looking into this matter is, to me, you know, first off, the media has reported that this was self-initiated. I find it very, very difficult to believe. I guess it's conceivable that a legal scholar may be a part of the grand jury and decided to do this. But I think it's highly unlikely. And I believe that Justice Wiemer was prophetic when he said that, you know, more political posturing is likely to follow. And I consider this political posturing.
All right, let's do this. I have some follow-up questions that I want to ask you, but I know it's going to take us to the bottom of the hour and we need to get to a break. So let's get to a break and continue this conversation with Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We've been talking about this most recent revelation about a special grand jury looking into the possibility of whether or not the Louisiana Attorney General Liz Muehl actually violated the public intimidation statutes of the state of Louisiana. Rafi, a couple of questions. One, legislative acts are presumed constitutional, right?
Yes. Yes.
So I mean, when you talk about the observation that you made about good faith, and I think it was pointed out as well in one of the letters that Ms. Muehl addressed to both the council and the mayor, is that as it stands on that day, prior to all of this going on, that law is presumed constitutional. So there's not a whole lot you could do about it unless somebody goes through court action to have it rendered unconstitutional, correct?
Correct. And that was the lawsuit that was filed on the day the legislation was passed seeking a declaratory judgment about the constitutionality of that act.
So their lawyer should have been in a position to advise them that at that moment, the state of the law is, it is constitutional. Now, my follow-up question is this. The statutes that were outlined in the letter from the Attorney General, they are, in fact, valid and enforceable, right? They're still on the books.
They're still on the books. You know, they're still on the books. And the Attorney General is responsible for upholding the laws of Louisiana.
How is it possible then for there to be public intimidation when the Attorney General says that I have available to me these laws that I think are applicable to a set of facts presented by this case that I could prosecute if I so desire? How does that become public intimidation? I mean, I get that the political nature of this, that an elected official probably doesn't like an AG saying these things to you. But this is, you know, becoming a really dangerous game here that's being played when she had not only the constitutional authority, but the statutory authority to do what she was doing.
Absolutely. That's why, I mean, I was stunned when I heard that there was a special grand jury looking into this. For all intents and purposes, this matter was resolved, in my opinion, when the Louisiana Supreme Court upheld the authority of the legislature to consolidate these two clerk's offices. I mean, the city of New Orleans has saved over $6.5 million going forward by consolidating these two offices into one. So the state is off the hook for about $1 million in operations for the criminal district court as well, because there is sufficient money in the civil clerk of court's office in their surplus fund to pay for the operations of both courts for the foreseeable future. So at a time when the city is fishing for quarters in the sofa to keep the lights turned on, you know, this is, you know, a windfall for the city of New Orleans. It's in the best interest of the operation. Keep in mind that the legislature isn't requiring that New Orleans do anything differently than the rest of the state of Louisiana has done for decades in this thing. This is something that should have been taken care of 20 years ago, and they never got around to doing it. So, you know, Liz Merle now, you know, keep in mind that, you know, we were talking earlier this week about the reductions in crime. Police department has done a fabulous job, and the police department will be the first to tell you that part of the reasons for the reductions in crime over the last several years are due in large part to the fact that the Louisiana State Police are here. So under an agreement with the state of Louisiana, the Louisiana State Police are here, and all of the cases that they make are being handled by the Louisiana Attorney General's office. The arrests that are made by those state troopers have made this city safer. The workload is being absorbed by the Attorney General's office in this, and that's being done with the permission of the New Orleans District Attorney's office. The Louisiana Attorney General, the Louisiana State Police are the best partners that the city of New Orleans has and has been for decades in reducing crime and responding to the issues. And it's undeniable that, you know, we would not be in this, pleasant position where we're seeing crime go down over 60% to 70% since the Louisiana State Police arrived here, were it not for the cooperation and agreement between the District Attorney's Office, the New Orleans Police Department, Louisiana State Police, and the Attorney General's Office. This investigation places all of that in jeopardy. Yeah. So
let me ask the question from another perspective. I've racked my brain trying to figure out how a prosecutor in their official capacity could be guilty of public intimidation.
Well, that goes to the immunity issue that prosecutors have.
Yeah, but separate and apart from the immunity, you're not required to tell people the truth that you decide to go investigate. If there's a legitimate statute on the books and the DA or law enforcement undertakes an investigation, there are a whole lot of things that we say to individuals under investigation. I don't know how an investigatory body can violate the public intimidation statutes in their official capacity. If there's some semblance of evidence of anything of what they're doing, you know, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't believe that Liz Merle's letters to the New Orleans City Council constitute a violation of the Louisiana felony public intimidation statute?
Yeah. Of course not. So, I mean, you know, she outlined options that she had available to her. and separate and apart from that, she also had private conversations, telephonic conversations with these same parties, begging them not to move forward, you know, with the actions that they were going to take in trying to call a special election. And, you know, so if anything, she was trying to mediate the situation to try and get and take the quickest path to get to the conclusion as to whether or not the legislative act was constitutional or not, right?
Absolutely. I mean, wasn't she on your show? And didn't she make statements to the effect that she had discussions with Mayor Moreno and with some of the council members advising them that, you know, the acts of the legislature were lawful and urge them not to move forward with their plans? And didn't she say that? And didn't they acknowledge? I thought she acknowledged that her conversations with some of the council members and or the mayor, they agreed that the legislation that was passed was in fact lawful. Did she say that on your show? Because someone told me that. Yes. I don't know if that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So you may be a witness. You may get a subpoena to appear before the grand jury. You know, and your audience may be witnesses in this as well. Yeah.
Right. So to add insult to injury, and going along with what you said earlier that you can't make this stuff up, the judge, Leon Roche, is one of the judges that should be replaced, but because of political gamesmanship, he gets saved under last in, first out. You know, he gets saved, and then he appoints Lori White, a former judge on the criminal district court, right? To go and prosecute the claim in the grand jury. This all seems really incestuous to me. You know, it's just, very interesting the way that this is playing out, and I don't believe in coincidences at all.
Well, this is old school, dirty Louisiana politics, you know? So apparently the council, you know, is trying to slap back at the attorney general, who was only doing her job when she warned them to wait, let the Supreme Court rule. So the perceived alleged threats, the perceived public intimidation, you know, if she was, you know, if she intended to prosecute them, she didn't have to write that letter to him. She could have just sought an arrest warrant and brought criminal charges against them. She didn't do it. She was attempting to mediate to quell this before it spiraled out of control. The matter was resolved. Her position was confirmed by the Louisiana Supreme Court and actually the federal Fifth Circuit Court that also ruled in favor of the legislature's authority to create and consolidate these offices. So, you know, her legal position was upheld. I'm perplexed as to how this is a criminal case. And as I pointed out, there have been four accepted public intimidation charges that I could find in the criminal district court record since 2022, and all four of those cases resulted in dismissals. Normally, when you're dealing with public intimidation, you're talking about threats of violence. There was no threat of violence in this. There was no actions taken by Liz Merle to attempt to even build a criminal case. She cited Louisiana law and tried to urge the council and the mayor and the district attorney to wait and allow the Supreme Court to rule on this. And that's what she did. The Supreme Court upheld her position. And the clerk's office now is operating under a consolidated clerk of court, something that should have happened 20 years ago. And the result of that is that the city of New Orleans is saving millions of dollars, and the state of Louisiana is saving millions of dollars. And the city of New Orleans is now in alignment with every other judicial district in the state of Louisiana.
Yep. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Raphael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. When we come back, folks, we'll talk about the judiciary and some of the issues there. When we return, stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Raphael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Raphael, let's pivot to the next topic and talk about some issues relative to pay and all kinds of other payments for the judiciary.
Right. So, yeah, I was doing some work over the last week or so, taking a look at judicial, some legislation that was passed that would, I believe, is over the top potentially in providing a pay raise to Louisiana Supreme Court justices. So I asked my staff to take a look at, you know, how has the Louisiana judiciary fared as far as pay raises versus other agencies in Louisiana? And what my staff came up with was that, you know, judges are treated very uniquely when it comes to compensation. Judges, by the judicial canons, are not supposed to lobby. So what Louisiana has done is they have created a judicial compensation committee. And that committee studies and makes recommendations about judges' salaries and what should be paid to them. So that is the only branch of government that has a commission like that. So the Judicial Compensation Committee has successfully provided information that has resulted in pay increases for judges in 10 of the last 11 years. So at a time when school teachers, you know, the state's contribution for school teachers, you know, was an issue, and they were fighting about $2,000, trying to find $2,000 to pay school teachers more money. When state supplemental pay for deputies, you know, is $500 a month, and they got it boosted to by $100 to $600 a month. Judges are receiving annual pay raises in the thousands of dollars. And no one is been the has received more pay raises than the Louisiana Supreme Court. Seven justices to the Louisiana Supreme Court. Past year, I believe that they received another pay raise in excess of $12,000. But that's not what got my attention. What got my attention was an innocuous bill that was passed in the waning hours of the legislative session that provided for Supreme Court justices' housing allowances. So Supreme Court justices are elected from districts all over the state. There are seven justices. Four of the seven justices live within an hour and a half drive of the city of New Orleans. They have to meet in New Orleans for oral arguments once a month, and that could range from 2 to 4 days that they have to leave their home base and come to New Orleans to sit and preside over matters of the Supreme Court. So going back to 1989, the legislature approved a housing allowance of $1,500 a month for Supreme Court justices. And in the early days, the justices that were coming from outside the area could receive that money. Now, that money, that $1,500 a month for housing allowance, does not have to be verified by receipts or payments. It goes directly to the Supreme Court justices. And initially, it was justices that were traveling, you know, from more remote areas to the city of New Orleans. Some point in time, some of the local justices were saying, it's not fair that we're not receiving the same housing allowance that the justices that had to drive and stay overnight. So many of the justices, can preside over their responsibilities during the day and drive home at night. But they're still receiving a housing allowance. Well, the legislation that was passed basically says that the last time that this housing allowance was modified was when it was initially established in 1989. The legislation calls for a consumer price index adjustment on anything on that housing allowance since the last time it was modified. It's never been modified. So what that legislation may do, and I don't know if this is actually going to happen or not, but what that legislation may do, it may increase the $1,500 a month housing allowance to all Supreme Court justices to over $4,000 a month. Justices don't have to submit any receipts to verify that. They just receive that. And because it is a payment like that, it's taxable income. The fact that it's taxable income means that that accrues to the justices' pension benefits as well. So we're looking at, potentially a $35,000 to $40,000 pay increase on top of the $12,000 pay increase that justices receive. Every other state employee, every other, person in the private sector, if they're traveling, they have to produce receipts and they get reimbursed for their actual expenses. So what the Louisiana Supreme Court is receiving is extraordinary in all of this. And, I think that it's time that, we're talking about, we saw the legislature eliminate judgeships in Orleans Parish. The Louisiana Supreme Court is responsible for managing and supervising all of the courts in Louisiana. And when you have justices that are what I believe are taking advantage of the situation in this, I think it's no wonder that the public has questions about the integrity of the judiciary. Keep in mind that, the Supreme Court is responsible for disciplining everyone and making sure that the judicial canons are upheld and followed by all the judges in Louisiana. But this is essentially unjust enrichment, in my opinion. And I don't know, and I've spoken to a few legislators saying, what if this scenario occurs where the consumer price index adjustments are applied to over 30 years and the stipend that the judges receive goes from $1,500 a month to north of $4,000 a month. Most of them, the people that I've spoken to, said they had no idea that that's what that legislation meant. And, you know, I suspect that that legislation was authored and the language was provided to attempt to disguise this massive pay increase that may be forthcoming just for Louisiana Supreme Court justices to the tune of almost $50,000 a year for housing. So we have a justice elected from Orleans Parish, and that justice can go home at night, but they're going to receive that housing allowance. We have several justices that are elected within an hour's drive of the city of New Orleans. People that come to work from the surrounding parishes have to commute, and they don't get a housing allowance to do it. They don't get meal.
Well, we're going to stay connected with you and follow up on that story, because that is very interesting, and it's not unusual to have these things pass in the dead of the night and the waning days of the session. But we run out of time. We really appreciate you joining us today, Raffi, and we'll talk more next week. And have a great weekend.
Happy 4th.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.